Hello and welcome. I'm Dandy Zhu, and you're listening to Digital Health Forward, a podcast dedicated to sharing the stories of healthcare entrepreneurs, leaders, and executives who are moving the digital health industry forward. Today's conversation is with Leo Grady, CEO of Paige. Paige is a global leader in AI-based software and pathology with a mission to drive the future of precision medicine. Paige is committed to transforming the diagnostic space by building an industry-leading portfolio of AI-based clinical applications, biomarkers, and diagnostics. Leo and I talk through the state of AI and technology adoption in the world of oncology pathology, what Paige has built so far and what's ahead for the company, and Leo's reflections on driving change in healthcare. Hope you enjoy the conversation. Hey, Leo, it's great to have you on the show today.
Thanks, Dandy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Really excited to learn more about what you're building at Paige. And congratulations on the recent close of the Series C round, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really excited about the investors that we have. It's really an amazing time and an opportunity. And this funding gives us a chance to really lean in and invest, broadening our product portfolio and, you know, working to expand our install base.
Yeah, I'm very excited. And we'll definitely dive more into the growth plans and what we're planning on doing with the funding. But want to start from the beginning in terms of Paige's inception story and how it was founded. So about 4 years ago, Paige was founded by Dr. Thomas Fuchs, the director of computational pathology at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and Dr. David Klimstra, the chairman of the pathology department at MSK. So love to hear a little bit more about the inception story, sort of how they started the company and how the relationship with Memorial Sloan Kettering sort of came about.
So it predates me, actually. So I can only tell it from the history I was given. I came into the company about a year or two after it was founded. But Thomas had been working in AI for pathology for some time and, you know, had really spent a lot of effort building a variety of different AI techniques to target pathology slides. For those of you who don't know in the audience, you're not familiar with pathology. Pathology is the branch of medicine where you pull tissue out of a patient, stain it, look at it under a microscope, and ultimately render the diagnosis. And over the last 10 years or more, the capability has come on to do high-speed slide scanning, where you can take these glass slides that are typically looked at under a microscope, feed them into these high-performance scanners, and be able to start digitizing the workflow. And because of this maturity in the hardware and the scanners, that has made it possible to really start to look at applications of AI. In parallel, over the last 10 years, you may know there's been this explosion in AI, particularly in image processing, computer vision. And so Thomas was looking at the ability of AI to extract information out of these slides. And he had moved to Memorial Sloan Kettering here in New York. As you may know, it's one of the world's leading cancer hospitals. And Dr. Klimstra, who heads the pathology department, has been very progressive, very forward-looking, really brought a lot of different kinds of technology into Memorial Sloan Kettering. And so they had actually gotten this big endowment to develop a digital health effort in pathology. And so when Memorial Sloan Kettering started digitizing their workflow, they bought many different scanners, they brought some other AI researchers in, then they decided, you know, there's really amazing technology here, there's really amazing opportunity, and MSK made the decision to spin the company out. So this was in really about 2018 is mm-hmm. when the company came out. The first employees were middle of 2018. And then they recruited me as the CEO. I joined in early 2019.
Yeah. And how did you hear about the company? And tell us a bit about also about your background at HeartFlow and at Siemens before and sort of how that led to what you were thinking about in terms of what you wanted next in your career.
Yeah. So I did my PhD in Boston about 20 years ago in AI and computer vision. So long before it was kind of the topic it is today. And I spent the early part of my career at Siemens, Princeton, where we were applying AI in a variety of different clinical applications, primarily in oncology. Eventually, Siemens acquired a number of companies in vitro diagnostics, so we started applying AI to some of the IVD applications as well. And what I realized is that there was just an enormous potential for the technology for AI. And I felt that to realize that potential, we needed to go beyond having it tied to a hardware company. So back in 2012, I went out to Silicon Valley out of the Bay Area, and I joined HeartFlow. And what HeartFlow was doing was building, or is doing still, is building a cardiovascular diagnostic test for coronary disease that is a combination of AI on cardiac CT images plus computational fluid dynamics. And what we were doing at HeartFlow was really groundbreaking for a number of reasons. First of all, this is a pure software-based diagnostic test. We did multiple clinical trials. We got de novo clearance from the FDA. We had NICE recommendation. We got Medicare reimbursement, CMS reimbursement, and we launched it on the cloud too. So this is a pure cloud-based service. And we launched HeartFlow throughout North America, Europe, Japan, and it's incredibly impactful because it's just really a new way of assessing coronary disease. And I was really excited about what we were doing at HeartFlow. And but I gave a talk at one of the big AI conferences on what we're doing at HeartFlow. Thomas gave a talk right after me on Paige and what they were doing. And then we got talked, we went out to dinner, and he asked me if we solved all these problems at HeartFlow. And I had answers. And yeah, but we broke ground. I mean, so we figured out how to just deliver that kind of technology, how to prove it, how to bring it through the FDA, how to, you know, really build something solid and robust and could be used clinically, not just a research tool. And so, you know, I just recognize that the opportunity to make a difference in cancer with the collaboration with MSK was just enormous. And so, yeah, I picked up and I'm in New York and haven't looked back.
Now here we are 3 years later, raising a Series C.
It has. When I joined the company, we had 18 people.
Wow.
And now we have 84, and we'll probably double or more by the end of the year. Great, we're going.
Very exciting. So I want to deep dive into what Paige is building. But before that, I want to set the stage a little bit more around this problem space in oncology and pathology. And so help us understand a little bit more about the biggest pain points that exist and some of the opportunities for innovation, sort of just broadly in the oncology pathology space.
Well, oncology is enormous. You know, about one third of deaths worldwide are from cancer. And cancer is incredibly complex. There are many different types of cancer, many different tissues, many different ways in which cancer can occur. Many, many different types of therapies and new pharmacological agents that can be used to address cancer. So it's enormously complex. But you can boil down cancer and really, I think, any, you know, medical application to diagnosis, there's prevention, but putting that aside. But early diagnosis and then treatment selection, treatment follow through and follow-up and monitoring. And so, you know, in the cancer world, depending on the type of cancer, there are different screening applications. So for prostate cancer, men above a certain age will get a PSA test. You know, women over a certain age will start getting mammograms, breast cancer. If you're a certain age and a smoker, you eligible for lung cancer screening in the U.S. And so on. Colon cancer people get colonoscopies. Those are the most common of the four cancers. But then once something gets found, or maybe something is suspicious, then you ultimately need to investigate. And this is where pathology comes in. If you find a high PSA in a man, you end up taking a biopsy of their prostate. You find a lump in a woman's breast, you take a biopsy. And this is where pathology comes in, because that biopsy goes into the lab, the tissue gets prepared, and the pathologist looks at it under a microscope to figure out what the problem is. Is there a problem? and ultimately what the next step of treatment is. And the challenge for a lot of pathologists is a few. If you're a pathologist and you look under a microscope and you see something that looks funny, that looks unusual, you may not be sure what it is. Is this cancer? Is this grade 3? Is it grade 5? If you have those questions, you can ask a colleague. You can maybe send the tissue for some other kind of molecular test. You can send it off to somewhere like Memorial Sloan Kettering and get an official second opinion. But ultimately, all of that information is going to come back and you're going to have to make a diagnosis. And that diagnosis is going to be incredibly consequential for somebody. Because if you say that they don't have cancer and they do and they don't get treated, that can be catastrophic. And if you say that they do have cancer and they don't, and they end up having a mastectomy or something like that, that's catastrophic as well. So there's a lot riding on the pathologist's diagnosis. And in that situation where they see something and they may not be exactly sure what it is, we at Page have the opportunity to have them not look at a microscope, look at a monitor, and to be able to match all of the patterns in the tissue with patterns in these large databases, where we can effectively provide information to that pathologist that says, this is a patient that has these patterns, and those patterns are very similar to all of these patients that did ultimately have cancer or did not have cancer or whatever it is, and give all of that information to the pathologist during the diagnostic process so that they don't need to go find the right colleague or send the case out or start doing additional testing, that they have that information so that they can get the diagnosis right, but also get it back quickly to the patient and their referring physician.
Right. That's very helpful context. And I think that's a perfect transition into some of the questions I wanted to ask about the product and some of the experiences and the strategic choices the company has made. But like you said, in terms of the pathologist perspective, when they're using Page's technology, they're able to see these suggestions and recommendations based on Page's algorithm and the pattern recognition that you guys are able to do because you've had many millions of images in the database that it's learning off of, right? So tell us a little bit about how that works, the training works, and where those images are coming from.
So we apply a lot of the same learning technology that you see today in everything from Apple's face recognition to unlock your phone to, you know, when Google looks at all the YouTube videos and figures out which ads to serve you. It's all the same kind of underlying technology, you know, extremely complex pattern matching. And in our case, what Thomas and his lab had built was really a breakthrough in the AI technology, specifically for pathology, that allowed us to train these AI systems very quickly and at a very large scale. Mm-hmm. And the way in which that works is that classically, if you were to go through and build an AI system in pathology, you would ask a pathologist to come in and circle all of the tumors and circle all of the, you know, certain types of cells and really manually train that AI system. But it's very difficult to do. It's very difficult to scale. It's expensive. You end up with quality issues, disagreements with pathologists. And so what Thomas's technology works differently. What it does is it just learns from the diagnostic report. So if the computer has seen enough examples of grade 3 or grade 4, the computer learns to identify the patterns that are common to all grade 3 or all grade 4 without anybody having to circle those patterns on the slide. And this is important for three reasons. It allows us to build systems at enormous scale. Hundreds of thousands of cases can be used to train our various cancer detection systems. Second, it means we can move very quickly. We started with prostate cancer, but go from prostate to breast, colon to lung, to all the other areas of cancer where our technology can help. And third, it allows us to start looking for biomarkers and structures and patterns in the tissue that no human pathologist necessarily is going to be able to circle. for us. It's a marriage of the databases that we have available to us, power, the cloud, and then this breakthrough in the AI technology that was published recently in Nature Medicine.
Yeah, and when a pathologist wants to start using Paige's technology, what else do they need? Do they need to make sure they get their own scanner? Or like, what else is required to have the whole platform work?
The main thing is the scanner itself. Mm-hmm. So there are a number of great scanner vendors on the market today, and most of them have very good quality and allow you to do high volume. And there are opportunities. You know, we've worked with a couple of labs that are going digital to help them, you know, with the digital scanner piece of it. But that's the main thing. Once you have a digital scanner and you have a tech who is able to feed all of the slides into that scanner, then everything that we've built at Paige can help the pathologist organize the data, help them view the data. Our viewer was cleared by the FDA for primary diagnosis last year, which means you can use it to do primary diagnosis digitally. And then all of these AI systems can run and do this pattern matching and make that information available to the pathologist.
Right. And besides the digitized slides themselves, are there other sources of data, say genomic data or anything from their EHRs that Paige is also incorporating into that decision-making process?
We could. So today, some of the EHR data is incorporated, but primarily to just connect it to the clinical data so that the pathologists have all the information that they need when they look at slides. Because, you know, you don't want to get mixed up with the wrong patient. You want to have all the context. Is it a man or is it a woman? What age are they, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not factoring into the pattern recognition itself. With genomics data, you know, obviously this is an area really just shown enormous diagnostic capability to help select the right treatment to better understand the cancer. And there are a number of genomic tests out there. Memorial Sloan Kettering has their own called MSK Impact. Mm-hmm. And there is certainly work that we are doing and you see in some academic groups to look at the tissue and the genomics data and to say, are there patterns that are common in this tissue that are phenotypic expressions of the genomic alterations? Like, in other words, can we look at the tissue and with our AI and with these databases, find patterns that are common to all tumors that have a certain mutation? Mm. And that way, it would allow us to use the AI technology to, you know, either identify certain mutations, you know, quickly and easily, or say that the patient is at high likelihood for some rare mutation and should go get in a more comprehensive genomic profile.
That is so interesting. And I want to talk a little bit more about this partnership with MSK, because it seems like this access to 25 million plus tumor slides is probably one of Paige's biggest assets and competitive advantage compared to other companies who might be trying to build what you guys are building. So tell us a little bit about how this partnership works and what other partnerships Paige has also established to further the mission.
Yeah, the partnership with MSK is very strong. We come from Memorial Sloan Kettering. They have ownership in Paige. And as you mentioned, this data access that we have is really unique and it's exclusive. And it is an incredibly key asset for Paige, because not only is it an enormous amount of data that's been scanned and generated over time, but it also links to, you know, as we mentioned, the genomics data and other information about these patients that can help us better look for patterns that can be indicative of the success or failure of certain treatments. And lastly, the quality of the data is just much higher than you would get at most institutions, because MSK has such a world leadership across all the different subspecialties of pathologists. There are, I believe, 94 different pathologists at MSK, plus a range of fellows. And each one of them is globally recognized as a leader in their field. And so we have the benefit of also using ground truth as that from an institution like MSK, which is really very difficult to beat anywhere else in the world. So it's absolutely an incredible resource. We do have other kinds of partnerships. I mean, we have partnerships with some of the scanner vendors. We have partnerships with some of the pharma companies. You know, J&J was one of the investors in our latest round. And we also have announced a partnership last year with the diagnostic company who makes a diagnostic test for breast cancer. And what we are doing with them is building an AI-enhanced version of their test. So I think, you know, these partnerships are really, I mean, these are obviously all the ones that have been announced. I think there's a real opportunity to leverage the data, the technology, and also just the opportunity of seeing pathology cases in different hospitals that allows us to really build enormously robust technology.
Yeah, and I found it interesting that so Paige decided initially to focus on this clinical diagnostic space, but given the assets and the know-how in computational pathology, there seems to be so much runway and other opportunities to also work with pharmacos, for example, in drug discovery and development, or help with clinical trial identification and recruitment and things like that. And so how are you guys thinking about some of these other use cases for Paige's tech, and how has that evolved over time?
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I don't think it has to be either or. You know, the fact is that today, most hospitals aren't digital. Most pathologists look at microscopes and they do not do their diagnosis through a digital image. And so part of what we need to do is be able, and the reason that they don't do that process digitally is because it adds cost, right? I mean, you have to buy a bunch of scanners, you have to, you know, set up monitor, you have to have storage and buy a viewer, all these different things. And then pathologists say, okay, and then I can see it on a screen instead of on a microscope. Why did we make all those investments, right? And that's a fair point. The value that we can bring with AI, with all of this other technology, really provides a substantial improvement, can provide a substantial improvement to their workflow, their turnaround time back to the patient. And as a result, we really believe that having a robust profile of clinical technology is going to be essential just to drive adoption of digital pathology. And so, you know, you can build biomarkers all day long from digital pathology slides. If nobody's scanning slides, then
right,
it almost doesn't matter. So I think the clinical piece is really essential. At the same time, you're absolutely right that the biomarker definition from tissue is an enormous opportunity. I mean, just to give you kind of a sense, when you scan these pathology slides, you scan at quarter micron resolution, and that means that one single slide can have 100,000 pixels on one side, 50,000 pixels on another, 6 billion pixels in one slide. And if you put that in more human terms, the fanciest, most ultra-high-def monitor you can buy today has got only, I think, 200 million pixels. So it's a huge order of magnitude leap in just the amount of pixel-wise data, one single slide. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly been shown, and we have evidence too, that you can see, you know, phenotypic expressions of the underlying molecular mechanism. So I think there's enormous, enormous opportunity here, and this is why we are working with the pharma companies, but it's still early days in terms of bringing those to market.
Yeah, and you mentioned for the clinical diagnostic workflow that there's all these upfront investment costs related to scanners and storage and all of that, but that, you know, the value proposition is clearly there for these labs to adopt because of the efficiencies and workflow and better patient outcomes, I assume. Can you share a bit more color around some of the impact around those metrics to date for the pathology labs and hospitals that have adopted the tech?
We're still in early days too, in terms of producing that data. So there are a few studies that have been done, and there are a few studies that are accepted that will be out in print soon. But I can point you, for example, to the Modern Pathology paper that was published last year. And this was a small study, but what it did is it took three pathologists. They did their diagnosis on about 250 prostate cancer slides. Mm-hmm. And then they went home for 5 weeks. They came back, they did their diagnosis the second time. Second time they did it, they used Paige and saw the highlights of all the information that Paige was generating. And when they did their diagnosis the second time, there was a substantial decrease in them missing cancer that was actually there. Mm. So basically, there was a 74% reduction in false negatives when they were using Paige compared to when they were not using Paige. Now, a few caveats here. One is it was a small study. Two is that the data was more challenging than usual. So it was there were more positive cases than you would see in a normal workflow. And three, none of these pathologists were specialists in prostate cancer. They were more general pathologists. But all practices, currently practicing and seeing prostate cancer cases. So there was a substantial reduction in false negatives, whereas there was no difference statistically in false positives. And, you know, if you extrapolate that out, you know, there are about 1 million prostate cancer biopsies every year. 20% of them are positive. And so if there's a 74% reduction in false negatives across the entire population, it's a substantial number of patients that might have been missed.
Right.
Yet still have significant disease.
Yeah. And when it comes to something like cancer, as we know, you know, catching a diagnosis earlier may make a very meaningful difference in terms of their prognosis and, you know, being able to get them on the right treatment plan. And so I can see how extrapolating that out would make a very significant difference to both patients, but also to the hospitals and their quality of care.
Well, you're absolutely right. And, you know, there's a lot of buzz today around liquid biopsy companies, around Grail and Thrive and all of these. And it's rightful buzz. And a lot of the value proposition there is that by providing more effective screening, they can find cancer earlier. And, you know, and all of the data around the value that they have is aimed at earlier catching patients. But, you know, if you find a patient earlier, they're going to have smaller disease in their tissue when you do actually do a biopsy. And so it's even more difficult from a pathologist standpoint in the absence of having the kind of tools that we're building at Paige.
Yeah. Interesting. So shifting gears a little bit, you mentioned earlier around this the FDA approval for the viewer for primary diagnosis. It definitely stuck out that you guys decided to pursue FDA clearance and CE marks for using AI in oncology and pathology, and we're really the first ones to do that back in March 2019. So what was the rationale for pursuing the regulatory approval process? Was it required, or did you decide that this is something you wanted to do? And how did you navigate it? What was that process like?
Well, just to be clear, in 2019, we received breakthrough designation for our prostate application. That's different than clearance. What breakthrough designation says is that the FDA has determined that your technology can offer significant benefit to patients. And second, that there's nothing available like it available on the market today. And so when the FDA gives you breakthrough designation, it's a recognition of the significance of the technology and a commitment to work with you very closely to bring it to market as quickly as possible, but still going through a full regulatory process. So we have still not cleared the AI application in prostate. But we have cleared the viewer for primary diagnosis. But that wasn't your question. Your question was, what's the why? Why go after regulatory clearance?
Yeah.
You know, I think that the question is, what are we building here, right? I mean, are we building a research tool? Are we building something that's fun and interesting? Or are we building like a medical diagnostic technology that's going to be used to help in the treatment of patients? And you know, very early on, we made the decision that we are going to go for, you know, actually benefiting patients and really substantially helping doctors with this new information. And in order to do that, you know, rightfully, you have to go through the regulatory process. The FDA has to say, this technology is both safe and effective. And you can't just go out and claim whatever you want. You have to prove it, and it has to be rigorously reviewed. And then with that clearance and the determination by the FDA that it is safe and effective, then you can go out and you can start communicating that to doctors and say, you know, you really should use this because it's going to help benefit your patient. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we made the decision. We didn't want to build a research tool. We didn't want to build something fun that sits in the corner. We were building a serious clinical application. It's exactly what we did in HeartFlow. And it's, you know, HeartFlow has been used in hundreds of thousands of patients at this point. And I can tell you, you know, we had patients that came to our office, with patients that say, you know, your technology saved my life. Doctors couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. They've got a HeartFlow test and they suddenly realized what the problem was. They fixed it. I feel 100%. I've got kids. Like, thank you, you know, and that is really meaningful. And I think we have the opportunity for the first time to help patients with cancer get the right diagnosis, get it quickly, and ultimately to be able to roll that out, not just to the patients fortunate to come to MSK, but patients all around the world with cancer.
Yeah, listening to that just kind of gave me goosebumps because I think hearing some of these patient stories is what keeps a lot of us who work in healthcare, you know, really motivated to keep going when change is hard and we're building difficult things. But that's really inspirational.
Well, you know, every one of us, I think, has been touched by heart disease and by cancer. At some point, if we haven't been, we will be. So this is all of our loved ones and eventually ourselves will, you know, have to face one of those two at some point. And, you know, I think we have an opportunity to really leverage a lot of this new technology and to be able to significantly impact those diseases. And, you know, sometimes people ask, why did MSK spin off Paige? I mean, if you look at their mission, MSK's mission, it's a nonprofit. But their mission is to improve the diagnosis and treatment of patients with cancer. And sure, they could have developed this technology and used it on their patients, but to really further that mission at a global scale, you know, the technology needs to be out there. It needs to have, you know, support staff that actually goes and helps, you know, fix issues and teams of software engineers that build it. And, you know, it's like it's not what a hospital does, but that was the origin.
And now Paige can really scale the tech and hopefully improve access to this to many, many, many more cancer patients, like you said. This has been an incredibly insightful conversation. Thank you, Leo. I want to end on some parting reflections. So as you think about your journey, Paige, and also before Paige throughout the healthcare industry, what are some of the biggest lessons you've learned either personally or professionally?
Healthcare is hard, but it's hard because it matters. Mm-hmm. And I do think that AI technology is something that is having an impact on healthcare. And I think that the opportunity ahead of us is much greater than the opportunity that was behind us. And I feel very fortunate to be where I am at a company, you know, that comes from one of the world's greatest institutions in cancer care, that I think we can have a very broad impact, not only on clinical patient care, but also working with pharma companies and other therapeutic companies, help them build the right therapies, find the right patients for those therapies, and ultimately deliver better treatment to patients.
Well, excited to follow the journey and what's ahead for Paige. Thank you so much, Leo, for taking time.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Dandy.